Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd canto, 2nd chapter, verses 8 through 21. Kechit svadeham tamiya kriyavakashe padeshamapram purusham vasantam chaturvacham kanjaratam vashanka kadataram bhavanaya svaranti. Translation. Others conceive of the personality of Godhead residing within the body, in the region of the heart, and measuring only 8 inches. With 4 hands, carrying a lotus, a wheel of a chariot, a conch shell, and a club, respectively. Mukam karati vachalam, mangam avayate, yuryatikam tamaham vande shi purum vinatayam. Om agyanat vandasya agyan shala shalakaya, chakshuvinitam yuratasmashi vinatayam. We've heard about meditation on the Virat Rupa and how Lord Brahma simply remembered or meditated on this Virat Rupa form of the Lord, and he got some power. What power did he get? Remembrance, how to create the universe. So by this meditation, you can even understand how to create the whole universe, meditating on Virat Rupa. So this was the first step in God realization. Indirect meditation, seeing the Lord in His energies. And now, the second step, one step higher, to direct meditation on the Supersoul in the heart. So this is the purpose of human life. Purpose of human life is to find Krishna, either in the heart, or in the Virat Rupa, or in the temple. Somehow or other, we have to find Krishna. So Shukadeva is giving us many different ways that we can find Krishna, even in our daily lives. So Shukadeva advises we should not waste time running after illusory names in this world. Illusory names that are of no value, in sea waves. We should not waste this time, because what happens if we run after these illusory names, they simply lead one to suffering in the river of Vaitarani. Instead, we should simply act for the bare necessities of life, and spend the rest of our time searching for Krishna, engaging in spiritual life. The transcendentalists, they reject this illusory manifestation. They reject the illusion of enjoyment, actually, in this material world. And instead, they focus on Krishna. So this Bhagavatam, always, right from the beginning, is actually is separating truth from illusion. What is that verse? The second verse said that vastu vastavam acharam vastu shivaram. It's separating truth from illusion. So now Shukadeva describe. Yeah, go ahead.
It's not working.
Shukadeva described the illusion that we should reject, and now he's going to describe the truth that we should accept, that we should focus on. And this is the reality of Supersoul meditation. So verse 8, we heard the beginning, how the Lord is situated in the heart. He has four hands, holding lotus, wheel, conch shell, and club. So verse 9 and 10. His mouth expresses his happiness. His eyes spread like the petals of a lotus. And his garments, yellowish like the saffron of a kadamba flower, are bedecked with valuable jewels. His ornaments are all made of gold set with jewels. And he wears a glowing headdress and earrings. His lotus feet are placed over the whorls of the lotus-like hearts of great mystics. On his chest is the Kaustubha jewel engraved with a beautiful calf. And there are other jewels on his shoulders. His complete torso is garlanded with fresh flowers. So remember, we heard the description of the Virat Rupa, how human life, human beings, are the residence of the Lord. So now we're getting a more elaborate description of where he lives. He's living in the heart, in the world of the lotus of the mystics. And in the 8th chapter, I'll read a few verses. These verses explain how he gets there. Of course, he's already there, but how we are able to actually perceive him sitting there. This is explained in the 8th chapter of the 2nd canto. This is verses 4 to 6. Maharaj Parikshit is speaking, Shukadev, 2, 8, 4 to 6. Persons who hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly and are always taking the matter very seriously will have the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna manifested in their hearts within a short time. So where did we hear before in the beginning of Bhagavatam the same thing? You know that Sadyo Hridayubhate Cha Pritivi, that this is a benediction of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam that Vyasadeva gave us. Then verse 5 continues. The sound incarnation of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Soul, Srimad Bhagavatam, enters into the heart of a self-realized devotee, sits on the lotus flower of his loving relationship, and thus cleanses the dust of material association, such as lust, anger, and hankerings. Thus it acts like the autumnal rains upon the pools of muddy water. So when we hear Bhagavatam, it enters our ears, and Bhagavatam sits on the lotus of our hearts. So this is what is being said here. How he's lotus feeder on the world of the hearts of great mystics. Because we heard a purport before that Krishna's feet must always be on a lotus, either the lotus of Vrindavan or some lotus. So here, there's a lotus in our hearts also. Our heart can also become a tam. In the last verse, a pure devotee of the Lord, whose heart has once been cleansed by the process of devotional service, never relinquishes the lotus feet of Lord Krishna because they fully satisfy him, as a traveler is satisfied at home after a troubled journey. So once you get the vision of Krishna's lotus feet in your heart, you don't let go. And that's the most wonderful thing for you, for the devotee, when he actually has this, when he can sustain this meditation in his heart. So verse 11 is describing further the features of the super soul. He is well decorated with an ornamental wreath about his waist and rings studded with valuable jewels on his fingers. His leglets, his bangles, his oiled hair curling with a bluish tint, and his beautiful smiling face are all very pleasing. So, before the class, somebody was asking me about these leglets, what they are. And in the Sanskrit, it's nupura. Nupura is a word which means ankle bells. Nupura. So he's wearing ankle bells. Sometimes in our temple, Krishna and Balaram wear ankle bells also. Big, big ankle bells. Big, thick ones. And Krishna also. Chamsundar. He wears ankle bells. Verse 12. The Lord's magnanimous pastimes and the glowing glancing of his smiling face are all indications of his extensive benedictions. One must therefore concentrate on this transcendental form of the Lord as long as the mind can be fixed on him by meditation. So Prabhupada, paragraph 2, at the beginning of paragraph 2, Prabhupada makes sure we understand that this is bhakti yoga. Prabhupada says, the process of meditation recommended herein is bhakti yoga, or the process of devotional service after one is liberated from the material conditions. Jnana yoga is the process of liberation from material conditions. After one is liberated from the conditions of material existence, when one is nivritta, as previously stated herein, or when one is freed from all material necessities, one becomes qualified to discharge the process of bhakti yoga. Therefore, bhakti yoga includes jnana yoga, or in other words, the process of pure devotional service simultaneously serves the purpose of jnana yoga, liberation from material conditions is automatically achieved by the gradual development of pure devotional service. These effects of bhakti yoga are called anartha nivritti. Things which are artificially acquired gradually disappear along with the progress of bhakti yoga. Meditation on the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead is the first processional step. It must show its effect by anartha nivritti. So this is the first step. The first step is meditation on Krishna's lotus feet, and if we are doing it properly, we will find the result will be anartha nivritti. We'll become freed from all these sins. And that's why we're reading the first and second cantos first, because this is the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. And by reading first and second cantos, hopefully by the time we finish the second canto, we'll be free from anarthas.
Next Friday?
No, not next Friday. End of November. That's only the first three chapters, sorry. You have 10 chapters, second canto. Now, hopefully by November 12th or around there, or 14th, we'll be finishing the first two lotus feet of Krishna, and we will see if the result is there of anartha nivritti. At least some anartha nivritti, maybe not all anartha nivritti, but at least some of it should be there. And then that will be the real test of our study of the first and second cantos of Bhagavatam. Prabhupada says, and then if you're free from anartha nivritti, then you can progress in your meditation to third canto. So we will see how many people come back next year for third canto. See who made it through anartha nivritti. So this is very important. Then Prabhupada continues, the conditioned soul is encircled by such products. Oh, I skipped something here. Anyway, that's where I'm reading from. Let me see where that is. I should have told you where that is. We're in...
10 lines down from where you read.
Okay, 10 lines down from where we read. We're in verse 12, and we're in the second paragraph, right?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a very long paragraph.
Okay. Actually, it's way down. Okay, 10 lines down from where I was reading. Conditioned soul is encircled by such products as well as products of sex desire, and therefore bhakti yoga leads to gradual evaporation of the sex desire, which is summarized in three headings, namely profit, adoration, and distinction. So we have our four regulative principles, and these are helpful for us to give up the gross manifestations of sex desire. But we may be giving up the gross manifestations, but still there are subtle manifestations of sex desire, and Prabhupada is pointing them out here in this purport. Profit, adoration, and distinction. And these are weeds in our devotional garden. Well, actually, it's in the Bengali, profit, adoration, distinction. So in Bengali, it's puja, labh, and pratishta. And if anybody knows Sanskrit, they can. But puja means worship, that you're not attached to people worshiping you or praising you. So puja, labh means gain. So profit, so adoration, profit is love, and adoration is puja. And pratishta means actually position or distinction, some position. And you get some recognized, like you become very high up in the spiritual hierarchy, and then you become proud of that. And then you're enjoying that position. Either you're enjoying the worship, or you're enjoying the gain you get, the money or the whatever, or you're enjoying the position. So these are three subtle sex desires. And this is, we experience this while we're practicing bhajana kriya in the stage before nishta, while you're going through anartha nivritti. Okay, so now we're connected?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. So we missed the first part there, the lecture. Anyway, that's why it's good to be here. Whoever is tuning in on the CD is going to miss the first part. So, what's that? Tape is. Oh yeah, first. Oh yeah, okay, very good. So he can record that onto his tape recorder. Good thinking. So you can actually facilitate that. Okay, so the first part will be, it's here on the tape, and you can give it to him. So anyway, so these are manifestations. How do we see them in our garden? We have a devotional garden in our heart. So how do these subtle desires manifest in our devotional garden?
Thinking that the cause and results of your activities are because of your own abilities.
Right, this is a good analysis. Now, if you have a picture in your mind of your garden, how do they manifest?
Weeds.
There are weeds in the garden. Weeds. So when we chant Hare Krishna, we're watering the weeds also. We're watering the creeper, we're also watering the weeds. Very unfortunate. So therefore, We have to take out these weeds, the subtle sex desire. We have to be introspective. And we have to catch ourselves. When these thoughts come, we can't just let all the thoughts come through our head the whole day long. But we have to understand what's going on within our consciousness. Prabhupada says, all conditioned souls are mad after these different forms of sex desire. One shall see for himself how much he has been freed from such material hankerings based primarily on the sex desire. As a person feels his hunger satisfied after eating each morsel of foodstuff, he must similarly be able to see the degree to which he has been freed from the sex desire. Sex desire is diminished along with its various forms in the process of bhakti yoga. Because bhakti yoga automatically, by the grace of the Lord, effectively results in knowledge and renunciation, even if the devotee is not materially very well educated. So these last sentences are a paraphrase of a verse in the 11th canto. Does anybody know that verse? Yes, bhakti, kvalesha, bhavo, viraktir, anyatra, self. So it's... You will understand when you're making progress, when bhakti appears, and detachment appears, and direct perception of the Lord. These three things. And you'll be satisfied. So let's go on to verse 13. The process of meditation should begin from the lotus feet of the Lord and progress to His smiling face. The meditation should be concentrated upon the lotus feet, then the calves and the thighs, and in this way, higher and higher. The more the mind becomes fixed upon the different parts of the limbs, one after another, the more the intelligence becomes purified. So, paragraph 2, talking about intelligence. Oh, maybe it's not paragraph 2. Let's see, verse 13. Is it paragraph 3? Oh, yes, it's paragraph 3, sorry, middle. Our intelligence in the present conditioned state of life is impure due to being engaged in sense gratification. The result of meditation on the transcendental form of the Lord will be manifested by one's detachment from sense gratification. Therefore, the ultimate purpose of meditation is purification of one's intelligence. So, when we actually progress in our meditation, then we experience detachment. These anarthas are removed. And what's the real purpose of removing these anarthas? Why do we want to get rid of these anarthas? What, Sankirtan?
To have this perception of the real self.
Yes, to have perception of the real self. And what happens? Yes. Yes, our love for Krishna. And how is that love manifested? Letting go of. Service, yes. Because these anarthas, they block our serving mood. They block our mood. They block our attachment to serving Krishna. These anarthas make us serve something else. They make us serve lust, anger, greed, all these things. So we have to remove these anarthas. And the last paragraph of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, oh, here Prabhupada is being very heavy. Last paragraph. Those who are too engrossed in sense gratification cannot be allowed to participate in archana or to touch the transcendental form of the Radha Krishna or Vishnu deities. For them, it is better to meditate upon the gigantic Virat Rupa of the Lord, as recommended in the next verse. The impersonalists and voidists are therefore recommended to meditate upon the universal form of the Lord, whereas devotees are recommended to meditate on the deity worship in the temple. Because the impersonalists and voidists are not sufficiently purified in their spiritual activities, archana is not meant for them. So immediately, Prabhupada, what is he doing? He's taking this meditation on super soul and he's equating it with deity worship. And he does that all the time. So that these impersonalists and voidists, they are forbidden to do this sort of meditation. Better they meditate on the Virat Rupa, and that is what Shukadeva also will say in verse 14. Unless the gross materialist develops a sense of loving service unto the Supreme Lord, the seer of both the transcendental and material worlds, he should remember or meditate upon the universal form of the Lord at the end of his prescribed duties. So in the Vedic culture, people would do their puja morning and evening. So he's saying, okay, and you're at the end of your duties, either morning and evening, you should do this, or at the end of your life, when, at 50, when you stop your karma and you take up jnana. In the Vedic culture, they would give up at the age of 50, like we heard in the previous chapter, and they would take up this meditation. So, in the middle of the purport, we're in verse 14 now. There are some nice sentences here. Some way or other, it's like the bottom, I don't know if you have the same pages as I do. It's page 90 you have?
Yep.
Bottom of the page. It's about the middle. Some way or other, one must try to reestablish one's forgotten relation with the Lord if one at all desires to gain real happiness in life and to reclaim his natural, unfettered condition. For the less intelligent beginners, meditation on the impersonal feature, Viratrup, or universal form of the Lord, will gradually qualify one to rise to personal contact. So that's in the middle. Confirming what the verse says. Verse 15. O King, whenever the yogi desires to leave this planet of human beings, he should not be perplexed about the proper time or place, but should comfortably sit without being disturbed, and regulating the life air should control the senses by the mind. Verse 16, thereafter, the yogi should merge his mind by his alloyed intelligence into the living entity, and then merge the living entity into the super-self. And by doing this, the fully satisfied living entity becomes situated in the supreme stage of satisfaction so that he ceases from all other activities. So this sounds very suspicious here. Merging? We're merging everything now. Is this impersonal liberation? Madhavi says no. No. Madhavendra Puri says no. Nishingananda says no. Yes. What is it? Yeah.
One to the other, and then merging the whole lot into the nature.
Yeah.
So in other words, we retain our identity.
We retain our identity.
We are merging together into the body, into the original state.
Okay, we're leaving behind all our material elements. Okay, Nishinanda? Okay, so his understanding is that it's oneness in desire. All the senses, the mind, and intelligence, we're merging, we're using all of them with one same purpose and one same desire, and that is service for Rishikesha, the master of the senses. So this is also Prabhupada's idea, his explanation, the purport near the beginning, how to use intelligence. Prabhupada says, when the mind acts under spiritual urge and acts wonderfully for going back home, back to Godhead, for life in complete bliss and eternity, therefore the mind has to be manipulated by good and unalloyed intelligence. Perfect intelligence is to render service unto the Lord. So this is how to use intelligence. First, Prabhupada makes 2 points. First point, one should be intelligent enough to understand the living being is in all circumstances a servant of the circumstances. So we are servant. That's the first point we should understand. Intelligence, our intelligence should accept that. We are servant. Every living being is serving, dictates a desire, anger, lust, illusion, insanity, and enviousness. All materially affected. But even while executing such dictations of different temperaments, he is perpetually unhappy. When one actually feels this and turns his intelligence to inquiring about it from the right sources, he gets information of a transcendental loving service of the Lord. So that's the second use of intelligence, is to inquire. Why am I unhappy following the dictation of lust, anger, greed, and all these things? What is the problem here? So that's the second use of intelligence. So the next question is how to merge into the super soul. Of course, I think you answered that also, that we use all these things in the service of the super soul. And that's also what Srila Prabhupada says in the purport. That when we actually serve the Lord then he begins to dictate to us. When the living entity is directly seen by the Lord dictates to him to act according to his desire. And when the living entity follows him perfectly, the living entity ceases to discharge any other duty for his illusory satisfaction. So the actual, what it means to emerge into the super soul is that we become so fixed in the service of Krishna that we're moving according to Krishna's desire. Our senses will not do anything separate from Krishna's desire, our mind, our intelligence. They're all completely aligned with Krishna's desire. So that's what it means to merge into the super soul. When we follow, when he dictates, and when we follow, then that's acting according to his desire. So now verse 17. Now we are progressing in our meditation, and we're going to achieve samadhi now in this verse. Verse 17. In that transcendental state of labdhoka shanti, there is no supremacy of devastating time, which controls even the celestial demigods, who are empowered to rule over mundane creatures. And what to speak of the demigods themselves? Nor is there the mode of material goodness, nor passion or ignorance, nor even the false ego, nor material causal ocean, nor material nature. So, do you notice something about this verse that's recurring again and again? One word. Na. Na this, na that, na 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 na. It's negative. It's a very negative verse. It means it's negating this material world. Whatever you see here, it's not there. So we're negating everything here. We are becoming impersonals. For the second? No, not really.
Not telling impersonals.
Yes. Actually, you can take this verse to mean that you have attained Brahman, but for the devotee, Brahman is something else, something even more. Of course, this is also true. When the devotee goes back to Godhead, this is also true. It can be applied either to the devotee or to someone who has attained Brahman realization. Also for the devotee, there's no devastating time. There's no wounds of nature. None of these things are there when he goes back to Godhead. So both are true. And Prabhupada, in his purport, also describes that. I think in the second paragraph, yes, how there are different goals for the devotees and for the impersonalists.
That would certainly still get the supremacy of time, though, wouldn't they, the impersonalists?
What's that?
I'm just asking, you said they don't get the time factor.
Yeah, in the Brahman, there's no influence of time.
Knowing that they come back due to circumstance anyway, loneliness or whatever.
Yes, they come back. So then they're again under time.
But I would say that somehow there must be some subtle influences of time. Loneliness would suggest that they're pretty well bored with the conditions, therefore it's just pressing on them over.
Okay, so he's suggesting there may be some influence of time on the impersonalists who are floating in the Brahman, lonely, all alone up there.
Bored.
Must be some influence of time.
Subtle.
Okay, anyway, there's no time, but their heart's desire is not being fulfilled to have a relationship with Krishna. So therefore, they cannot be satisfied. There may not be any time there, but there's nothing positive also. There's no positive relationship. So that lacking, there's a lacking there, that they're not fulfilled. They're not fulfilling their real nature. Madhavan Puri.
I was reading in the same way, saying, we see only the devotee can eradicate the Bhagananda.
Only devotee can?
You said eradicate?
I don't know what that word is.
Okay. Can
is it French?
Yes.
No wonder.
Question the place that it is available in Brahman, because he explained it takes millions of years to get out of the place of Brahman. And it goes, only the devotee can question that place and go further.
Only the devotee can go beyond Brahman. This is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's. Yes. I believe it. Yes, this is Brahman for those who are impersonalists. Of course, we know, and Prabhupada will say in the purport, there is something more. Vishakapriya.
Something about the influence of time.
time? Influence of time.
Seems to me that time only manifests
the activities. That's right. Past, present, future activities. So there would be no time. It's timeless. How do they... Good question. Which we won't discuss right now. So I want to go on to verse 18. Because this is a very important verse. Especially for us. The transcendentalists desire to avoid everything godless. For they know that supreme situation in which everything is related with the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Therefore, a pure devotee who is in absolute harmony with the Lord does not create perplexities, but worships the lotus feet of the Lord at every moment, taking them into his heart. So what are these perplexities that we should avoid? What is this verse talking about, Madhavanpuri?
I think
you think it's a whole list.
Seven or eight. Foolish conceptions, you should get rid of.
Foolish conceptions. Give me one.
So what is Brahman? What is non Brahman?
What is Brahman? What is not Brahman? What's another perplexity that we create or other people create? Maharaj.
Doubts.
Like?
Doubts in that we're on the proper path or not.
Yes, doubts.
Doubts whether we're progressing or not, and if we're in a proper situation or not.
Right. Are we in the right movement? Are we on the right path? We have the right mantra? Are we progressing? Or are we regressing? Okay, any other?
We have the right guru.
Do we have the right guru? Yes, that's a big perplexity.
Can he actually take me to the Supreme Lord or not?
Can he take me? So these are perplexities. So any other perplexities, Madhavendrapuri? So you have to take the Shingananda's course about spiritual master to solve that perplexity. Yes, Madhavendrapuri.
Thinking
ourselves as one with the Lord. These are all perplexities. Let's see what Prabhupada says from the middle of paragraph 1. Pure devotees, being perfectly directed by the Supreme Lord, do not create any artificial perplexity in the matter of transcendental understanding by wasting time discussing what is Brahman, what is not Brahman, or Maya. Nor do they falsely think of themselves as one with the Lord, or argue there is no existence of the Lord separately, or that there is no God at all, or living beings are themselves God, or when God incarnates himself, he assumes a material body. Nor do they concern themselves with many obscure speculative theories, which are in actuality so many stumbling blocks on the path of transcendental understanding. What are these obscure speculative theories? What is this?
Darwinism.
Huh? Darwinism? That's finished now. I taught my son science last year, and his name was not even in the book, of American science book. Darwin's name was not in the book. So somehow or other...
What is replacing it?
They don't... What?
What is the replacement?
No replacement. They just took him out. Now they have ecology, environmental awareness in the book and all these things. It's interesting. What they teach in high school science. No more Darwin. Yeah, no, they had a theory of the creation. Yeah, they had a theory of creation. One paragraph in the whole book. That the planets have, different planets have positive and negative charges. And before they were created, these charges somehow they came all together to make a planet. It didn't make sense. I couldn't figure it out. That was their theory of creation. One paragraph in the whole book. So I don't think they're trying to say too much about it now. It's very interesting. So, anyway, all obscure theories. So Prabhupada talks about another type here of stumbling block. Apart from the class of impersonalists or non-devotees, I don't know where this is. I think it's, this is at the bottom of paragraph 1. Apart from the class of impersonalists or non-devotees, there are also classes who pose themselves as devotees of the Lord, that at heart maintain the idea of salvation by becoming one with the impersonal Brahman. They wrongly manufacture their own way of devotional service by open debauchery and mislead others who are simpletons or devotees like themselves. So who are these people? What do we call them? What is their name? Sahajiyas. Sahajiyas. Yes. It's interesting that Prabhupada says if they want to become one with the Brahman, they appear to be devotees. And they're talking about Rasa-lila and so many things. But at heart, they want to, why does Prabhupada say that? They want to become one with the Brahman. They're acting like devotees and all this. Why is it that he says they want to become one? This is important for us to understand. They want to enjoy? Well, that's not exactly what the Brahman people want to become. Yes. They want to be? Yes, yes. This is the point. Not only they want to be Krishna, they want to be Radha, they want to be Lalita, they want to be Vishakha, they want to be Yashoda, they want to be all these people. So that's impersonalism, in the guise of devotion. That they all, if you want to be one of those people who are already there, then you're a Sahajiya and you're an impersonalist. It means you want to be Yashoda, but Yashoda is already there. You want to be Rupa Manjari. You want to be one of these Manjaris, but you can't. Places are already taken. We can be servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. And that's very nice. And Lord Chaitanya also wants to be that. So it's a very nice position. Prabhupada says, all of these non-devotees and devotees are, according to Vishnu Chakravarti, duratmas, or crooked souls in the dress of mahatmas, or great souls. Such non-devotees and devotees are completely excluded from the list of transcendentalists by the presentation of this particular verse by Shukadeva Goswami. So if you want to know where the Sahajiyas are mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, here it is. Prabhupada says, they are excluded from the list of transcendentalists according to verse 18, second canto, second chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. They are not in the list of transcendentalists. So, Prabhupada in the middle of paragraph 2 says, a pure devotee of the Lord no longer wastes valuable time discriminating Brahman from non-Brahman because he knows perfectly well the Lord Parabrahman, what his Brahman energy is interwoven in everything, and thus everything is looked upon by the devotee as a property of the Lord. So the impersonalists, they see it's all one energy. The materialists see it's all my energy. And the devotees see what? It's Krishna's energy, yes. So that's the difference. So the devotee, Prabhupada says, tries to engage everything in his service and does not create perplexities by falsely lording it over the creation. So here's another perplexity, trying to enjoy. He is so faithful, he engages himself as well as everything else in transcendental loving service of the Lord. In everything, the devotee sees the Lord and he sees everything in the Lord. Specific disturbance created by the Dharatma or crooked soul that is due to his maintaining the transcendental form of the Lord is something material. So now we heard what devotees don't do. They don't create perplexities. So that's half of the verse. Now what about the other half of the verse? What do devotees do?
They worship the lotus feet.
Yes, they take the lotus feet of the Lord within their heart. Srila Prabhupada explains what this means in one lecture on Kapiladeva, because in the discussion, Kapila is also instructing the yogis how to meditate on the form of the Lord. So in the third canto, 28th chapter, verse 21, Kapiladeva says, the devotee should first concentrate his mind on the Lord's lotus feet, which are adorned with the marks of a thunderbolt, a goad, a banner, and a lotus. The splendor of their beautiful ruby nails resembles the orbit of the moon and dispels the thick gloom of one's heart. So, anybody have a gloomy heart? Needs some light. This is what to do. So, Prabhupada, this is the verse. That was the translation of the verse. Srila Prabhupada in his lecture in that verse says, in this material world, we are living in darkness. Kridai andakar. But this darkness is in our heart. Our heart is dark. It's very dark. We don't know anything. What is happening? So Prabhupada said, if you simply concentrate on the lotus feet of Krishna, the marks, the thunderbolt, then you will get a vision in your heart. all these dirty things will be kicked out once. And Prabhupada used the word from the Sanskrit, ahata, the Sanskrit of the verse that's in third canto, that all the dirty things, all the anarthas will be attacked in your heart if you simply take the lotus feet of Lord Krishna in your heart and meditate on them. This is a lecture on 3:28:21. Ahata means get out, attacked. All the anarthas in your heart will be kicked out by this meditation. And then the next verse in the third canto, 3:28:22. The Lord's feet act like thunderbolts hurled to shatter the mountain of sin stored in the mind of the meditating devotee. One should therefore meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord for a long time. So these material desires, I think we read in a previous purport, from millions and millions of births, have formed in our heart a huge mountain. There's a big mountain of desire and sins in our heart. But if we simply meditate on the thunderbolt, which is on the lotus feet of Krishna, then this will shatter the mountain of sin in our heart. And all the darkness will go away. The chakra on Krishna's lotus feet gives light. You meditate on the chakra and it will give light in your heart. So this is Prabhupada's purport. He says, the dirt is like a mountain will be shattered when hit by a thunderbolt. Meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord acts like a thunderbolt in the mountain of dirt in the mind of the yogi. So this is Prabhupada's purport to that verse. So how to do this? This is very nice. So verse 19, we are continuing in our meditation, and now we're going to give up the body. By the strength of scientific knowledge, one should be well situated in absolute realization, thus be able to extinguish all material desires. One should then give up the material body by blocking the air hole through which stool is evacuated with the heel of one's foot, and by lifting the life air from one place to another in the six primary places. So this is Ashtanga Yoga. There are 8 different stages of Ashtanga Yoga. First one is Yama. Yama means the negative restrictions. Don't steal, don't ahimsa, non-violence, truthfulness, refraining from theft, brahmacharya, freedom from possessiveness. So if you actually follow these negative restrictions, just like if you are truthful, then all your words will be true. They can never be false. Anything that you say must come true if you practice truthfulness. And if you don't steal, then nothing will be stolen from you. And if you're not violent, then no one will attack. That's what it says here in the Patanjali Sutras. And the second stage is Niyama. These are positive regulations. Shaucham, cleanliness, satisfaction, austerity, studying the Vedas, meditating on the Supreme. And the third stage is Asana. Asana means all the different postures that you practice. And when you become good at Asana, what's the next stage? Pranayama, breath control. And the fifth stage, Pratyahara, bringing your mind back to meditation. And Dharana, finally you're meditating. And Dhyana, a deep meditation. Finally, Samadhi. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in his Prema Pradeep that at each of these levels, the yogi can fall down. There is a pitfall at each of these levels of Ashtanga Yoga. So at the level of Yama Niyama, you get the result of the fruit of religiosity, pious activities. So you may become attracted to that, going to heaven, doing these things. And the level of pranayama and asana and pranayama, you get very long life and you get free from all disease. So you might become attached to that and don't make further progress. You may be attached to becoming 1,000 years old. And then you never get out of the body. You just want to keep living older and older and older, longer and longer. So that's not the purpose of yoga. So this is a pitfall, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. And then in the level of pratyahara, you get sense control. But if you don't get prema, then it's like dry enunciation, which makes your heart hard like a stone. So you may become very hard-hearted at the level of pratyahara because you have complete control over your senses and your mind. But if you don't have prema, you don't have bhakti, then it's very bad. It's detrimental. And during the last three, Dhyan, Dharana, and Samadhi, material thoughts are removed, but if prema is not reached, there's a danger you will lose your identity. You could merge at that stage, because you do attain Samadhi. But these are the problems. And then what to speak of mystic powers? They also come. And if you get the mystic powers, that's really fun. Really something to have a good time with. So, my question is, actually it's described in 11th canto, 15th chapter, there are 8 primary mystic powers and 10 secondary mystic powers. This is 11, 15, 4 to 5, verses 4 to 5. So, most of us, I think, know the 8 primary mystic powers. Let's see if we can say what they are. What are the 8 primary? Madhavendapuri?
Anima.
Anima. And Lakima. What else? Prapti. Prapti. You can attain anything. Yes. What else? Maharaj?
Kamavayasitva.
Oh, Kamavayasitva. That sounds like a really good one. You can have whatever you want from anywhere, at any time or any place. Right. Yeah, Prabhupada tells a story about that. He had a... He went to visit his teacher's guru. And so his teacher's guru asked, what would you like to eat? And Prabhupada said, oh, if you have some pomegranate. So then he said, okay, go in the next room. And there is a branch freshly picked from a tree. It's from Kabul, Afghanistan. It's where the best pomegranates come from. So this is what they can do. Anything else? Yeah, in Madhuri. To control people's minds. Yes, this can be a lot of fun for somebody to do. If you're into controlling, you get this power to control people's minds. Yes, Madhupa. Destroy planets. Yeah, I'm sure you could do that. What power is that called? Yishitva. Okay? Manipulate the sub-potencies of Maya. Okay? Vashita. Is, let's see, number one, freeing yourself from hunger and thirst and other bodily disturbances. That's one. Now these are minor yogic siddhis. Two is you can hear something from anywhere, from very, very far away. You can hear something going on in America or wherever you would like to tune in. You can hear. Tune into some person speaking and you can hear. And another thing is you can see things from far away. You can see what's going on anywhere in this universe. Then the fourth, moving the body at the speed of the mind. So your body can move as fast as your mind can. That's one my son wants. So he can go visit his father. Then assuming any form one desires. Is entering the bodies of others, dying when one desires, witnessing the pastimes between the demigods and apsaras, then completely executing one's determination. Completely executing one's determination and giving orders whose fulfillment is unimpeded. Giving orders whose fulfillment cannot be stopped. If you give somebody an order, it must be done. Just like now, you know, it's... Anyway, we experience that we ask somebody to do something. If you have a cleaning person, then usually, sometimes they'll do it, sometimes they won't. First one is your determination... Completely executing one's determination. If there's something you want to do, then nobody can stop you. You're determined to do something. Nothing can stop you. This is 11, 15, 6, verses 6 and 7. Yes, that's right, if you have that mystic power. Oh, yes, right. We follow Prabhupada's determination, then we can have that. Right. That's a fact. We depend on Prabhupada or Krishna, then our determination cannot be stopped. That's a very good point. And that's what the devotees do. And that's why devotees don't worry about these mystic powers. The yogis, everything is on their own power. By my power, I am doing. By my power, I'm controlling my senses. I'm executing my determination. I'm controlling the modes. So that's the difference between yogi and devotee. Marangopapa, what's on this? A story. Okay. If it's short. What's that?
Indian man.
From America.
Yeah.
Walking through the city of New York. Yeah. An insect.
Very busy street in New York City.
Right.
And he found it very impressive that he had heard that insect.
Right. Okay, hearing things.
Okay,
yeah, there's trucks, there's everything in the street of New York, but this person heard this little insect. He said, depends what you concentrate on. So then he held a coin up in the air. And he dropped it on the sidewalk. It made a tinkling sound. So many people turned around to hear that sound. Depends what you're concentrating on. So people are thinking of money. So therefore, okay, Vanamali, yeah?
Seeing from Japan, this is now America, Russia, they are trying to apply this one to know the military secret.
Oh, yes. Yes, okay. The military is trying to see things and hear things from far away. Yes, Adikurusha.
Prabhupada Nagar was mentioned in the past, Shilpa heard a dripping tap.
A what?
Dripping tap.
A dripping tap.
From another part of the building, which was like many meters away.
Okay. Prabhupada heard a dripping tap from many, many meters away in a building in another room. And nobody else could hear but Prabhupada. Also, if the fans were on, he would hear that. Madhuri? Oh, yeah, right. I don't know that one. Anyway, but there's some more mystic powers here, too, which are not included in those two lists. There's a few others. And Krishna says, the power to know past, present, and future. Then tolerance of heat, cold. Of course, that seems included in one of those. Knowing the minds of others. Now, these powers we see people have, you know, just even ordinary people we meet, especially in India. Knowing the minds of others, checking the influence of fire, sun, water, poison, and so on, and remaining unconquered by others. These are some more extra powers. So then in the 11th canto, Krishna tells Uddhava how to get all these powers. And at the end of his description, he has two verses which are a conclusion. And he says that learned experts in devotional service state that the mystic perfections of yoga I have mentioned are actually impediments and a waste of time for one who is practicing the supreme yoga by which one achieves all perfection in life directly from me. Impediments and a waste of time. Whatever mystic perfections can be achieved by good birth, herbs, austerities, and mantras can all be achieved by devotional service to me. Indeed, one cannot achieve the actual perfection of yoga by any other means. So what is this? There's a verse in Bhagavad Gita. It says this. It says, whatever, all these things can be achieved by devotional service. Yes. Yes. Videshu yogeshu, what is that?
Tapasuchayva.
Some. Yes. 828. That all these things can be achieved simply by devotional service. So this was the conclusion of all this description of mystic powers in the 11th canto. And then in this first canto, 6th chapter, Narada Muni says, it is true but that by practicing restraint of the senses by the yoga system, one can get relief from disturbances of desire and lust. But this is not sufficient to give what? There's one thing it cannot give.
Love of Godhead.
What is that?
Love of Godhead.
Love of Godhead? Yeah? Yeah, I think somebody, I heard it. Satisfaction to the soul. Satisfaction to the soul. Of course, it can't give love of Godhead also. And then Narada Muni, when he was telling about how he was how these Bhaktivedantas were helping him explain the most confidential knowledge, and Narada Muni was describing his progress in the end of the fifth chapter, he said that first he got jnana, knowledge, confidential knowledge. Second, he got Aishwarya, he got all mystic powers. And third, he got bhava, loving devotional service to the Lord. So it makes you think, which is the best thing? Bhava, devotional service. Jnana, Aishwarya, it's not very important. Devotees have these things, but they don't show them. They rather depend on Krishna. So we'll wait, we're almost finished. I'll wait for questions. Verses 20 and 21. The meditative devotee should slowly push up the life air from the navel to the heart, from there to the chest, from there to the roof of the palate. He should search out proper places with intelligence. Thereafter, the bhakti yogi should push the life air up between the eyebrows, and then blocking the seven outlets of life air, he should maintain his aim for going back home and to Godhead. If he is completely free from all desires for material enjoyment, he should then reach the cerebral home and give up his material connections, having gone to the Supreme. So there was one, of course we have heard examples in the first canto of devotees who practiced this yoga system. Who are these? Dhritarashtra, yes. Also, we'll hear in fourth canto, Mahaj Prithu, he did this same yogic process, although he was a devotee. And this asana, there's a special asana which you take to leave your body, and it is called Muktasana. Muktasana, the asana of mukti. So this is the asana which is being described here, where you plug all the holes of your body, so your life air must go up to the top of your head. Muktasana. So Prithu Maharaj, he did this. And Prabhupada explained that why did Mahaj Prithu take up this yoga system if he was already a devotee, a pure devotee? So why did he decide to practice this Muktasana? What was the reason? Why would a devotee want to do that? Anybody know why? Why did Prithu do that? Yes? Nope. We're not going to follow his example. Muktasan. Yes, Hare Krishna. Yeah, that's part of the reason. He was conversant with the system and it was easy for him to use it. And what? Yes, Avinanda? What? It was a method of realization. It could be. It was a method of realization for that age. There was another reason. Because if he had waited when his body was going to finish, he would have had to wait a long time. So he wanted to go back to Godhead sooner. So therefore he took up this. He already knew the process of leaving your body by yoga, so therefore he took it up so he could go back to Godhead sooner. Prabhupada says, so he could accelerate his desire to go back to, accelerate his going back to Godhead. That's why he did it. And actually, when he became a devotee, Prabhupada says, or when he stopped all his practice of mystic yoga after realizing Krishna consciousness, he never did it again while he was practicing devotional service. Then he did it again at the end of his life because it was easy for him. He could just take it up and go right straight to Vaikuntha. So that's why he did it. So Shukadeva is giving us an overview of Ashtanga Yoga, but we should not follow this example, nor need we follow this example. Even Arjuna cannot do it. So how are we? How can we do it? Who are much less qualified than Arjuna. We have Kali Yuga bodies. We can't even get up for Mangalarti half the time. So what to speak of doing this heavy practice of Ashtanga Yoga, where you have to control your mind, your senses. You cannot deviate. It's not possible. So what does Prabhupada recommend, of course, for us fallen souls in this age of Kali? Chant the holy name, yes. Prabhupada said that chanting is more effective for concentration of the mind in this age. This is in one purport, which I forgot to read somewhere in there. So when we hear these descriptions of Jnana and Yoga, and we should be very thankful that we're in the age of Kali and we have so many concessions by Lord Chaitanya. Are you going to say something? Text 19, purport. Where is it? Last line. Oh yes. Concentration of the mind is more easily attained these days by chanting the holy name of the Lord. The results are more effective than those derived from the inner exercise of a life air. Sometimes yogis, people who practice yoga, they become devotees. And I remember that one such person said to me, wow, when you chant the Maha Mantra, then automatically the pranayama is there. They were telling me, I feel the same benefits by chanting that I do when I practice pranayama. So there was an interesting observation that actually everything is included in Bhakti Yoga. So we'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Yes? Two comments. Right. Okay, the more feet you have in your head, the more fortunate you become, more dust of lotus feet. Narada Muni got mystic powers. No. No, it's not a test. It just comes naturally by performing devotional service. What he said in the verse, it just comes naturally when you perform bhakti yoga. You get all knowledge, you get all mystic powers, and you get bhava. So everything comes for the devotee. Of course, it may be a test for some devotees if you get all these things. It may be a test, but it was not a test for him. But automatically, Prabhupada in the purport also mentions that that these things come just as a side effect of devotional service. Jnana, Vairagya, Aishwarya, these all come. Yes? Japamala is compared to the lotus feet. Okay, meditating on the Maha Mantra, you'll keep the lotus feet in your heart. Very good. So we should try that. Yes. Yes. Yes, when you chant, you can meditate. Get on a picture of Krishna, a picture of lotus feet, whatever helps your chanting. That's good. Any other question or comment? Yes? What's that? Yes, many devotees practice yoga. This is a comment. Even I practice yoga. Yeah. Yes, sometimes yoga helps you get up from Mangalarti. So therefore, in that case, it's Yukta Vairagya. If it helps your devotional service, then that's very nice. And I also find it that way too. When you get a certain age, then it helps you to keep your health so you can do devotional service. It's part of the prescription of the doctor to do yoga. But then the point is that, of course, it's not a method of self-realization. We cannot take it as that, but we can take anything in this world as helpful in our devotional service, even yoga. And that's also another point from these descriptions. We can take what is helpful for us to control our mind even. While we're chanting Hare Krishna, we can sit in asana, I find that helpful, to sit in Padmasana, chant Hare Krishna. Anything else? Vanamali?
This is one who started chanting automatically when he determined chant and follow Hare Krishna consciousness. No external force can stop him.
Right.
But unless he is problem, that he start chanting, this is one of the secondary mystical.
Okay. Yes, it's true. If you chant, then nobody can stop you. If you're chanting Hare Krishna. Vanamali is making that observation that you get one of the mystic powers that there is no obstruction, nobody can stop your determination. So he has experienced this by chanting Hare Krishna, taking shelter. So that's the point. Devotees, they take shelter of Krishna by the holy name or the books, and they get the same mystic powers because Krishna is Yogeshwara. So we depend on Krishna and we get the benefit even if we have no mystic power. Then we get the protection of Yogeshwara, who has all mystic powers. Text 8. Parashil Club, right. Yes, 8 inches. I think Prabhupada says in the purport, from your ring finger to the end of the thumb, more or less 8 inches. So you can measure. Different for different bodies. I'm sure in the ant, you won't have the same size. Big, yes, very big. Yeah, if you take time to measure. It's very good. Well, we have a different measurement here by Shri Prabhupada. Naramonis. Parikshit, well, he was a small baby. For Parikshit, it was that size. Remember? Size of a thumb. Because he was an embryo. Yeah. So well, I haven't studied that thoroughly. But Prabhupada seems to say to measure your thumb to your end of your ring finger and you'll get the size of Paramatma in your heart. Yes, he's bigger than we thought. We're smaller than we thought. Maharaj.
Remember that the text is about to be Supreme Personality of the Super Soul is situated in the hidden living entity.
Right.
The inaccessible spirit soul.
Yeah.
But it meant that there could be a share of electricity at the heart of the inaccessible spirit soul. This is
that also.
Yeah. So that particular living entity is that measurement. According to the Lord, is because of the living entity is mentioned by Matthew Upanishad as 1/10,000th of a tip of the hair. So within the heart of that living entity, 1/10,000th of a tip of the hair, the Supreme One is situated.
Okay.
In that vision.
Wow.
Meaning of that living entity, 1/10,000th of a tip of the hair, the spiritual body is infinitesimally small, being unmanifested now due to the embarrassed living entity is embarrassed by the non-manifestation of the spiritual body. So it means that infinitesimal spiritual body, that amount.
So Maharaj is bringing us to another understanding here, that within the 1/10,000 tip of a hair living entity, there is a heart. And there is a hand, and if you measure that hand, then you will get the measurement of the super soul in that heart. He's quoting Upanishads. Maharaj is quoting, yes, Nishide. Yes, right. Yes, we're talking about the yogis here. So the ant cannot meditate, obviously. So, yes, Nishide. Yes. Yeah, he's also in the body.
As well as
yes.
In every atom.
Yes. Yes.
And as one is playing in the spirit soul.
Yes.
So
okay. So just because he's in this small spirit soul doesn't mean he's also not within this body. He's also within the body and he's also within the spirit soul. And he's also in every atom. And he's also in every living entity.
So pervasive.
So we have to understand the complete picture of the Super Soul. He is in the body in this measurement. He is in the heart of the soul also. Living in, yes. Text 8. Yes. That's very curious. Ratanga. This is a special, this is Janardhan. Wheel of a chariot, yes. In the purport he says the same thing. Ratanga, and it's in the Sanskrit. The rat, a part of a rat. Ratanga. Very special manifestation of Super Soul we have here. Wheel of a chariot. Usually he has a disc, but this Super Soul has the wheel of a chariot. So this is very interesting. I think later on we'll see how Narayan manifests with the disc, not the wheel of a chariot. Ratanga. Verse 8.
The wheel is not invented.
That's right. The wheel is not invented. He's making the point that the wheel was there even before creation in the hand of Lord Vishnu. Yes. Yes, why not? Because Bhishma was had that meditation and he went to Narayan Maharaj.
So the reference to Bhagavad Gita about the sign of the Super Soul.
Okay, yeah, I know. I know that reference too. Let's hear it.
This is from chapter 8, James, text
9. Text 9, right. Bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest.
So he is smaller than smallest. The living entity is 1/10,000 part of the tip of the head. But the Lord is so inconceivably small that he enters into the heart of this body.
Okay.
Smaller than the smallest.
Thank you very much. Purport of Bhagavad Gita, chapter 8, verse 9. If you want to check that out. But he's also in the body. Yes, Dipyambar. Wheel of a chariot. Oh. Okay. Okay. So here's a clarification. Sudarsan chakra looks like the wheel of a chariot. It has thousands of spokes and it looks like a wheel. And also the wheel of time. Adi Purusha. The disc. Okay, one of the meanings of Ratanga is the disc of Lord Vishnu. So now we have solved the mystery of the wheel and of the chariot in the hand of the Lord. It may also be the Sudarsan Chakra. It probably is the Sudarsan Chakra because this is Super Soul in the heart. Of course, if Bhishma, when Bhishma was looking, it would be the wheel of the chariot in Bhishma's eyes. He saw the disc as the wheel of a chariot and he went back to Godhead, to Vaikuntha, to worship Narayan. Okay, any other comments? You have a comment? Question? And the group? Okay. Anything else? Any questions? Yes, Prabhu. His question is this system of meditation the same as what Maharaj Yudhisthira did? It appears to be similar in the mechanical process, but his actual picture of who he was meditating on was different. Like here the yogi is meditating on Super Soul, Yudhisthira will be meditating on Krishna with two hands. But the system appears to be the same. It appears very similar. But then it's not exactly the same because he didn't leave his body. He started walking north. Yeah, he lived in the same body. He didn't have to leave his body. So it's a bit different there. But he was Jivan Mukta. That's a good point. Yes, Manangopa. Verse 15. Okay, there's a Bhagavad Gita verses. Oh, that's one verse, 8:14. Right. Yes. Right. Right. If the process is so easy, why do we have so many difficulties? This is the question. Nishingananda.
Prabhupada was asked the same question.
Good.
And he emphasized that the process of bhakti is very easy in Australia.
In Australia, Prabhupada was asked the same question.
Why
do we find it so difficult? It's so easy.
The process is not difficult, but your desire is very weak.
Process is not difficult, but your desire is very weak. That's one answer. Leela Madhuri. We identify with the obstacles. That's true. More than the positive poverty. So the point is that we've been so long in this bodily concept that it's hard to change. It's very hard to change. Madhavan Puri.
112. Prabhupada says, the process is simple, but the application is difficult.
Okay, Prabhupada says, the process is simple, but the application is difficult.
Why is it difficult?
Okay, why is it difficult?
That's the question.
Again, the question is why? Because, and Parvati answered, because it's been so long we've been in this conception. And it's hard to change.
Somebody's holding the tree.
Oh, somebody's holding the tree.
And screaming, let go, let go, let go. But actually, we're holding on to it.
Yeah, we've put our faith in the material creation and all the things that this creation can give us. That this is actually our life, and this will support me. This will, as we heard, this will protect me, all these products of the material nature. That's where our faith is. So very difficult to change our faith. If we actually had faith in all the words Krishna said, then it would be much easier. If we really believed it. Yeah.
So the more we become convinced of the nature of the material world, eventually we will inspire the attempt to the world. That's why in the section, last chapters of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is using so many different angles and ways to convince us. Like example, Banyan tree.
Right. It's the end of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is using so many angles to convince us this is not the place to be. So when our desire becomes strong, then it'll be easier. Hare Purusha.
3.19.36. He is easily worshipped by Rishabhir, those who are straightforward, and Ananya Saranai, those who are devoted without unalloyed devotees.
Unalloyed devotees.
For devoted soul to the world. But he is Duraradhyam Asadhu. Somebody is Asadhu, and the world is very beautiful.
Okay.
So the same Lord is both very easily worshipped and is not very difficult.
Yes, if you have no duplicity, if you're straightforward, then the Lord is easy to worship. But if you have some motive, then it's difficult. Yes?
Since we have come to our learning experience in this world, now essentially said it depends on, that we are used to depend on material facilities.
Mm.
The other day we discussed this speed learning,
speed reading.
The process one has to undo the learning, so one has to read the book upside down. In fact, one has to read like that. And then the mind changes everything, and then the reading becomes very
long.
First you undo the learning, and then you learn a new technique, and you learn a reading technique where you have paragraph by paragraph, you read, and you look, okay, it's there. You look, it's there. And you read like that.
Speed reading. First you have to undo what you learned before, so you start reading the book upside down. And, okay, I believe it, yes.
It's a tremendous problem. So our identification with so many
With so many
bodily possessions.
body conception.
Identification with the false ego.
Yeah.
All this identification, they stop us from realization.
Okay, he says all our identifications stop us from realization. Anybody have an answer to that? Everybody agrees. Okay. Our identifications. Yes, Vanamali?
Same thing. If you follow Prabhupada, it's 100%, it's very easy. If you follow 50%, it's 60%.
Okay. His comment is if you follow Prabhupada's instructions 100%, it's easy. If you follow 50 or 60, it's more difficult. Yes. 24 hours. What's that? Okay, this is a very good point. With association of devotees, it's easy. Mani Gopa. Devotees here don't seem to have so much difficulty to understand. Everybody here says it's no problem. Only Madan Gopal has a problem. Nishingananda. Okay, Nishingananda has no problem eating prasad,
dancing
and chanting Hare Krishna,
singing
before the deities,
hearing
Bhagavatam, associating with devotees.
So,
no difficulty there.
If we keep doing that, then all the other tendencies will begin to vanish.
Okay, if you just do that all the time, then everything else will vanish. Adi Purusha. Okay.
Yes. If one is basically a sattva and the word is Dularaya.
Yeah, okay. If one is not a pure devotee, is what you're trying to say in English? If one is not pure.
Does it mean that one can try to insert those auxiliary methods like
Well, his question is, if you're not qualified like this to make it easy, should we rush out and do Ashtanga Yoga and Jnana Yoga and Nishinanda?
No, because Bhakti Chaitanya came and said, you don't need anyone because
yeah, okay, so we should follow the process of Lord Chaitanya. Madan Gopal? We should what? Okay. We'll read first and second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Madhavendra Puri.
In Navadvipa, when Lord Chaitanya is taking Jiva Goswami on Navadvipa, you just have to worship the Lord Chaitanya in Dasya Ras.
Yes.
And it will place you in higher Ras also. You don't have to extraneously endeavor to go anywhere, just Lord Chaitanya. And that's your Rasa. And he will place you wherever you want.
Okay, you serve Lord Chaitanya and that's your Rasa, and he'll place you anywhere you want. Abhinandan?
Don't
have to worry. Okay, Adi Purush, there you go. If you can't have fiction mind, then do bhakti yoga. And if you can't do that, then just work for Krishna. That's a good answer. If you're not. But I have another, yeah. Mahaprasad, okay. I would also say good association. Seek out good association. Because in Vrindavan it's possible. It's quite possible to get good association. Every desire is fulfilled here. So if you have that desire, then you will get that desire fulfilled. Yeah. Nityananda's mercy. And then Lord Chaitanya. Yes, this is the way to approach Krishna easily, through Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya. It's the only way, actually. And it's the easy way. And it's the way in this age. Only by the mercy of Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya can we get Radha and Krishna. Even though we're in Vrindavan in the lap of Krishna and Radharani, still we have to go through Gaur-Nitai. Cannot eliminate this step. And there are no offenses in worshipping Lord and chanting Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. So they will really help us remove our anarthas if we worship them. We worship them and then we can easily, this is the easy way. Easy way. Yes, Madhuri? Nitai Gaur. Yes. Right, Nitai Gaur, Nitai first. Yes. Also in Krishna book, when you see the appearance in the 10th canto, the appearance of Lord Krishna, first Balaram Nityananda came to prepare the way. So, and also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Nitai Gaur come first in our hearts, and they prepare the way, and they reveal to us the Bhagavatas, the two Bhagavatas, Srimad Bhagavat and the Devotee Bhagavat. This is described in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishna Das Kaviraj, that how Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya have appeared in Kali Yuga to finish all the ignorance and to bestow mercy on everyone. And that ignorance is what we were describing in today's class. It's the darkness in the heart. This is the ignorance that they will destroy. So first they must come in the heart. And then we can get the Bhagavatas, the mercy of the Bhagavatas. And then by the mercy of the Bhagavatas, we get bhakti. And we get love of Krishna. That's the step-by-step process given by Krishna Das Kaviraj. Yes.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, yes, Goswami to excavate all the pastime places to, in Vrindavan. The same way, in the heart, actually, when we follow the six Goswami Guru Parampara, then they will excavate. Thanks, Krishna.
So, Vanamali has made a very nice comment. He said that just like after Lord Chaitanya came, the six Goswamis came and excavated all the holy places. So if we keep Gaur Nitai in our heart, then the six Goswamis will come and excavate our heart and find all the holy places and make our heart adam. Very nice observation by Vanamali Prabhu. We follow in the line of the six Goswamis. Yes, Prabhu.
When calling out for the mercy of Lord Nityananda,
yes.
The blessing as Gaur Nitai, using Gaur as
Nitai Gaur. Okay, no. Gaur Nitai.
Identifying with Nitai. Generally, we say Nitai Gaur.
Yeah. Nitai Gaur.
Sometimes we also mean most of the time, or lots of time, we want to say on Nitai. So when we have a special appeal for the mercy of Nitai, we address him as Gaur Nitai.
Okay, I don't follow the reasoning, but.
Gaur
Nitai.
Gaur means
Gaur Nitai. Okay, so here we have a different opinion that we can call out Gaur Nitai to get the mercy of Nityananda because Nitai likes Gaur. No, she does not agree. Sorry.
Sometimes we make a special appeal.
Special appeal. Okay, we'll see who gets their prayer answered first.
And that will be the chanting of Gaur Nitai we are receiving in this session. So,
Nishigananda and then
Govinda. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami explained to Nityananda that you cannot separate Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. If anyone worships either one separately,
they
will not achieve. Okay. So both answers are correct. He's saying Gaur is Nitai, means okay. Lord Chaitanya belongs to Lord Chaitanya.
Oh, okay.
And you worship Nitai Gaur.
Yeah.
Okay. Alright, so he's talking about the Nitai that belongs to Gaur. All right? Does that satisfy you? Thank you. Govinda? Anartas. Okay, let's finish this one first. Are we all finished with Gaur Nitai? Nishinganan. Never. We'll never finish. Okay, our temple here is called Krishna Balaram Krishna. All right, I think this argument is finished. Now let's have another question. It was fun discussing it, though. Yeah.
Speaking about anatta,
an artist. So our question is that can't we just follow the process? Is it necessary, if we want to get free of an artist, can we just simply follow the process? Do we need to separately endeavor and analyze this? Oh, I got this anartha, I got that anartha. Is that necessary? Or is it? Is it good or is it? Yeah, how, what is the actual process? Shinanda and then Mata.
Both should be there.
Both should be there.
And because certain artists, you can eradicate them in a practical way. Understand, for example, change the circumstances, the surroundings, like some practical things that can do to eradicate them. And Jaya Swami is the whole cause of the overcoming material desires.
Jaya Swami. I think Maharaj also.
How to
overcome material desires.
The whole list of things that one can do.
So there are things you can do, and you should do. Actually, Prabhupada, another place, I just remembered that he said two things go on simultaneously. One is that we do the positive practice of our sadhana, and simultaneously we should try to get rid of our anarthas. There's in one place. Remember a commentary on the first canto, when it's talking about when you're chanting Hare Krishna and then the anarthas go from the heart. In that place, Prabhupada comments. Yes, Madhav Kuri.
We can also look at the demons which are slain in Krishna book.
Demons in Krishna Lila.
They always stand for Vaikyananda.
And which anarta they stand for?
And, by telling the story how he was killed.
Yeah. So if you read the story of how the demons are killed, then that will help remove your anartas. Madhav? Okay. So her, this is a nice idea. You take shelter of those, your Shiksha and Diksha gurus, your gurus, they will identify your weeds and give you help how to get rid of them, as they can see your garden. Rishaka? Yes. I've heard also Prabhupada will kick out your anarthas. So I'm moved to this darshan.
Ramapad Swami. Prabhupada is giving also a course about anarthas. Ramapad Swami.
Ramapad Swami is giving a course on anarthas.
I don't know if it's the same course that he's teaching also, but he gave one in Eden Ivory a few years ago. And he was explaining that it's very important to have a strong association.
Strong association.
Generally, you cannot find. Cannot see your own anarthas. So you need somebody else to help you to discover them. And also he was saying that it's very important that the devotees in that period, they're facing with some anartha, they're not isolated.
Okay, the two important points that you need strong association so they can help you see what your anarthas are. And the second point is that you should never be isolated. Because then you can the anarthas can overcome and attack you. Finishing. Okay, inside ISKCON or inside your heart? Oh, inside the temple. Okay, inside. We're talking on many levels. Abhimana. And then